So did any of you find any leaven in your homes this year during the now? One person's break. Two, three, four. Wow. That's more than I thought was going to raise their hands. That's quite all right. You know, that's part of what we try and do. I'm sure for those of you who didn't raise your hands, if you dug deep enough in your couch somewhere in some crevice, you know, you'd find something. But if you will, turn to Exodus 34, verse 18. I do believe this was read once this during the days of unleavened bread, but Exodus 34 and verse 18 states, "The feast of unleavened bread you shall keep. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, as I command you in the appointed time." Mr. Rink also pointed this out, that we are to eat unleavened bread every single day. We're to look through all our products and remove that which has leaven. If you will turn to 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 8, that's all the way on the other side of your Bible. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 8. Paul says, "Therefore, let us keep the feast not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." If we're going to accomplish keeping the days of unleavened bread with sincerity and truth, we have to do so with humility. Now, we started this season off with Passover. We each washed someone's feet. And this shows our willingness to be humble and to help others. Now, if you think back to the times of Christ, that it really was a chore to be done. Their feet were in sandals, and I'm sure they got a lot dirtier than our feet did, do today. But Christ did it to his disciples, and he commanded the same for us. Everything that we do should be done with humility. And one of the things that I'm really taking away from this Days of Unleavened Bread is this need to be humble. If we were coming out of sin, which we are, we could avoid sin a lot of the times if we remained humble in the first place. Pride was one of the main things that snuck into Satan and caused his downfall. It corrupted him. We also see that one of the greatest tragedies in the Bible was that of the first king of Israel, King Saul. Now, Saul was great in God's eyes. He was brought up from among his people to be king, the first king of Israel. If you will turn to 1 Samuel 15 and verse 17, we can read what Samuel says to Saul. Samuel said to Saul, "Although you were once small in your own eyes, did you not become the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king." So he was made king when he was humble and lowly in his own opinion of himself. You can see in 1 Samuel 9 and verse 21. First Samuel 9, verse 21, this was before he was king. "And Saul answered and said, Am I not a Benjamite, of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Why then do you speak to me like this?" So it was once he started, you know, thinking outside the box and not waiting on God, that's when pride got to him. He was no longer humble. His kingdom was taken away from him and his family. And it sadly ultimately led to his death. If you will turn to Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17, and we'll start in verse 14. We'll read to verse 20. Deuteronomy 17, in verse 14. When you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and possess it, and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are around me, you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. One from among your brethren you shall set as king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Verse 16. But he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Verse 17. Neither shall you multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. And starting in verse 18, really important here. Also it shall be when he sits on the throne of his kingdom that he shall write for himself a copy of the law in a book from the one before the priests and the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful to observe all the words of this law and the statutes, that his heart may not be lifted above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, and that he may prolong his days in the kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. Here we read the requirements for being a king in Israel. Now, these were written before Israel even had a king. God made sure to provide instructions before this event happened. So, you know, these rules were already in place when Saul became king. It showed what a king was to do and what he was not to do. Now, writing these laws out helped the king to put them in his heart, reading them day in and day out, as we see, to help the king to remain humble and obedient in following after God. And in turn, God promised to bless not only the king, but also the Israelites. And as Mr. Harris pointed out, time after time, the Israelites, you know, forsook God. They would go into captivity. They would remember, oh yeah, we're supposed to be obeying God. They would turn, come back, God would take them out of captivity. They'd go right back in. So what's changed in 6,000 years? What about us? Are we taking the course of being humble? Now, maybe it's easy to get caught up and think that we are better than others because we have the truth, because we know about the Sabbath, maybe because we're called at this time to be first fruits. But if you will turn to 1 John, we spent some time in this book this morning. 1 John 2, and we will begin in verse 15, states, do not love the world or the things of this world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of this world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. So having the pride of life here is not something that we want to have. Being willing to lay aside our wants and our wills and rather seeking after God is what he wants. You know, we know that from the physical to the spiritual, there is nothing that God does not know about us. And there's nothing that he's not willing to work out for us. Now, I can say this on personal experience and, you know, from people that I know. So being willing to ask for God's help at all times takes work. It takes being humble, being willing to admit our weaknesses, and then put our reliance in him. You know, even the great men of the Bible realize this. If you turn to Daniel 10 and verse 12, Daniel 10 and verse 12, we see the example that Daniel gave. And then he said to me, "Do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words." So we see that God heard Daniel's prayers because he was humble. Also, if you can find it in the book of Zephaniah, Zephaniah 2 and verse 3, we see that even the prophet Zephaniah spoke of humbleness. Zephaniah 2 and verse 3. "Seek the Lord, all you meek of the earth, who have upheld his justice. Seek righteousness. Seek humility. It may be that you will be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger." And then also in Luke 14, we see Christ giving a parable about humbleness. Luke 14 and verse 8. He says, "When you were invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, 'Give place to this man,' and then you begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, go up higher,' and then you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." And my last example was that of the widow who gave all that she had. If you will turn to Mark 12, verse 41. Mark 12, and starting in verse 41. "Now Jesus sat at the opposite of the treasury and saw how the people put many into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in 2 mites, which makes a quadrant. And so he said to his disciples, or he called his disciples to himself, and he said to them, 'Assuredly, I say to you that this poor widow, who has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury, for they all put in out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood.' Now she gave her offering in humility. She was doing what she could. And Christ found this so moving that he made the point to call his disciples over and point this out. Most likely she is one of those spoken of in Matthew 5 and verse 5. Who shall inherit the kingdom? The humble and the meek. And with that in mind, we are commanded to give an offering today. And so we are going to do so, like we have done so many times before. And I know that we've been told this, we've heard this time and time again. It's not just the amount that we give, but it's the attitude in which we give it. You know, with all the blessings that we have been given, and the gravity of the times that we find ourselves living in, how much more important is it for us to be doing this now with humbleness, with thankfulness, and with understanding?